is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, continuing my conversation with Professor Eric Klein. His new book, After 1177 BC, The Survival of Civilizations, a sequel to his original idea, 1177 BC, The Year Civilization Collapsed, which is now revised and updated for everyone to read both books together. It's important to note that the Bronze Age was globalization, trade of seven or eight empires intermixed in the Eastern Mediterranean, trade routes established, making bronze, tin from Afghanistan, copper from Cyprus and other mines in the Mediterranean basin, the same for clothing, the same for spices, the same for gold, coming from all over. Adam Smith would approve of the Bronze Age. However, it then crashed suddenly with a combination that the professor can list, but they were all bad things happening at the same time. Some survived and some didn't. We talked about the survivors so far. Now we're going to go to the failures, the Hittites. The reason you don't know that name is because they failed. Professor, the Hittites were Turkey, were Anatolian Heights. They had a vast area to develop. They were a powerful empire, and they failed. My reading of your explication, because there are a series of decisions that they make and from their capital, Hattusa, is that they had bad leadership. What else went wrong with them? Thank you.
So they do have bad leadership at the end. You're quite right. But in their heyday, they were to be reckoned with. I mean, the Hittites as a whole are in central Anatolia, modern-day Turkey, from about 1700 BC until 1200 BC. They were on a par with ancient Egypt at its height, 18th dynasty, Akhenaten, Amenhotep III, names like Shupiluliuma I and Hattusilis III. In fact, there's a famous battle that they fight with between the Hittites and the Egyptians, the Battle of Kadesh in about 1279 BC, which ended in a tie and the world's first recorded peace treaty, of which I think there's a portion at the United Nations. But by the time 1200 BC swings around, the Hittites are already in decline. They had been ravaged by a plague that had wiped out the Hittite royal family. Shupiluliuma I, in fact, about 1340 BC, had died of the plague, as had most of his family. And the survivors showed very poor leadership. In fact, there seems to have been a schism between various members. And one of the kings had, in fact, seems to have abandoned the capital city of Hattusa and moved the capital. So when the collapse came, we see, for example, letters written by the Hittite kings and queens down to Egypt saying, there's a famine in my land. Do you not know this? It's a matter of life and death. And one of the last Hittite kings, Tutaliya IV, actually puts up a whole line of gods and goddesses inscribed on a large outcrop of rock called Yazlikaya. But yes, this is not a good time to be a Hittite, and especially it looks like their capital city of Hattusa is then attacked and burned, not by the sea peoples, but perhaps by one of their age-old enemies, the Kashka, coming down from the northeast. So they are unable to unify after about the time of Tutaliya IV and Shupiluliuma II. I love saying their names. They're absolutely wonderful names. I actually wanted to name my kids, one of them Shupiluliuma, but my wife objected for I don't know why, but so it goes. At any rate, poor leadership would be the best explanation, and the Hittites per se go down. They go away. Their society collapses, the economy, the government, and they are overtaken. We get other peoples moving in. We get the Phrygians over to the west. We get the Urartians over to the east. And indeed, the Hittites in central Anatolia go away such that we had lost them to history. We didn't even know the Hittites were up there until about 100 years ago, maybe a little bit more. The one thing that does remain are what we call their rump states. That is, at their heyday, the Hittites had not only controlled all of Anatolia, all the way to the west coast where Troy is, but they had also controlled what we would now see as northern Syria. And those little city-states in north Syria, they survive, and they become the Neo-Hittites or the Syro-Hittites. And they're going to be successful, but the main body goes away. The way I say it, it's like the British Empire, which is not around today anymore. But places that had been in the British Empire, even today, still drink tea and, you know, play soccer. And so it's kind of that situation here as well. So even, you know, archaeologists had lost the Hittites, but these Neo-Hittites in North Syria, those are the ones that the Bible knows. And where the Bible mentions the Hittites, they're talking about these hangers-on in what is northern Canaan, but not Hittite Empire proper.
We come to the city of Carchemish, one of those remnants of the Hittites, which is well-placed. It's on, the professor tells me, it's exactly divided by the sovereign border of Turkey and Syria, so dangerous place to try to excavate. But Carchemish never asserts itself. It feels like a Euphrates-based Ugarit. Is that how it functioned itself, as sort of a trading center?
Yes, essentially. And new excavations have just begun in the last decade or so, and they had to make sure that all the mines that had been put there between on the border had been taken out before they began excavating. It does turn out that Carchemish flourishes during this time period. What's interesting is that Ramses III had specifically mentioned it in his inscription as 1177 as having been overrun, and yet the archaeologists have not found any evidence of that destruction, which is intriguing. So we've got to figure that out. But the new excavations especially, and the earlier excavations by the British, Hogarth was there in 1911 or so, they show that Carchemish, again, is, I wouldn't call it totally anti-fragile, but it does adapt. And we have a whole line of kings that rule in these centuries. It's not just Carchemish, by the way, but the other little cities and city-states around it as well. There's one site, Tel Tayanat, that has been excavated by the University of Toronto for the last decade or so. And that also shows that this area as a whole is a commercial nexus or nub once again. But they are all constantly under threat by the Neo-Assyrians, who attack them and demand tribute on an almost yearly basis.
We need to mention one Assyrian king at this point, the Battle of Karkar, Shalmaneser III. I note that Carchemish pays tribute to him, but at the same time, did Carchemish contribute soldiers to the Battle of Karkar? I know the Israelites did. Did Carchemish?
Yeah, it says that they've, all of these, we have an inscription from Shalmaneser III, the Neo-Assyrian king, in about 853 BC, and he actually names all the people that are lined up against him. And so Carchemish is in there, the Israelites are in there, Egypt is in there. In fact, that's where we get a mention of Ahab the Israelite coming with men and chariots. Shalmaneser was victorious, though. He beat them all, including the contingent from Carchemish. And in fact, he then goes on and names a number of different times in other inscriptions. One particular ruler, a guy named Sangar, S-A-N-G-A-R, who seems to be a king of Carchemish round about this time, and just wails on the guy for decades, exacting tribute and so on. So the Battle of Karkar is one of our most important dates and linchpins at this time, because it ties together a lot of the societies that we're talking about here. In fact, the Neo-Assyrians are the thread that runs through much of my sequel, because they also attack the Phoenicians and get tribute from them, as well as the Neo-Hittite states, and of course, then famously, the Israelites, and eventually the people down in Judah as well, which actually gets beyond the time frame that's covered in the sequel, just barely, because I stop at about 776 in the first Olympics, and all that takes place later in the 8th century. But the Neo-Assyrians do a number on all of these people, and Battle of Carchemish at about 853 BC, as I said, is one of the hallmarks of this period.
Karkar, yes, to the Assyrians, I get the impression everything's a nail. We're going to turn to the Minoans and the Mycenaeans next. That's Greece. The book is After 1177 BC, The Survival of Civilizations. Professor Eric Klein, I'm John Batchelor.